The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
All meetings of the Select Committee on Establishing an Electoral Boundary Review Commission.
The request is for waiver. Is it agreed?
Agreed.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those against say nay. The motion is carried. Orders of the day, oral questions put by members to ministers. The time now is 1:07. We will finish at 2:07. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, yesterday during question period in the Newfoundland and Labrador House of Assembly, the Conservative Minister of Natural Resources had this to say in response to a question about the proposed Muskrat Falls project. And I quote, "It is not a matter, Mr. Speaker, of Emera owning the link. Essentially what they will do, we will give them a certain amount of power and we will own the link. Mr. Speaker, in other words, Nova Scotia is paying for us to own a $1 billion asset," end of quote. And I will table that, Mr. Speaker. So my question to the Premier, why are Nova Scotians paying Newfoundland and Labrador more than $1 billion for something we will never own?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, the benefit to Nova Scotia is, of course, the power that comes across it, and that's how it is priced. It means that not only will we have access to that block of power, but, of course, for however long that line is there, we will have access to power coming across it.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, it's abundantly clear that once again, this Premier has not acted in the best interest of this province, Mr. Speaker. This maritime link deal, if it ever comes, Mr. Speaker, to fruition, will guarantee rate hikes for 35 years, and at the end of the day, Nova Scotians won't even own the asset, Mr. Speaker. My question to the Premier, how can this Premier continue to support a proposed deal without knowing the full cost, a deal that by all accounts will result in a more than a billion dollar asset being transferred to Newfoundland and Labrador and higher rates for Nova Scotians?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I don't know where the Leader of the Opposition has got his information from, but the fact of the matter is the way that this works is that there will be a stable one-time cost to Nova Scotians through the purchase of that asset. It means that we will have a stable price for that power over a 35-year period. If Nova Scotians today could have power at 1994 prices, just imagine what an advantage that would be for Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, Newfoundland and Labrador signed a deal with Quebec, Mr. Speaker, many decades ago that they're still paying for. Mr. Speaker, you know what they saw coming? This Premier in Nova Scotia to make up for the poor deal they signed with Newfoundland and Labrador. They know Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker, is prepared to settle for. Mr. Speaker, Newfoundland's portion of this deal has already gone up by $1.2 billion. That's the equivalent of what we know Emera's contribution to construct the Maritime Link will be. Since Nelcor's portion has gone up substantially, Mr. Speaker, it only stands to reason that Emera's portion will increase as well. So my question to the Premier, will the Premier instruct Emera Incorporated to release an updated cost of the Maritime Link deal immediately so that Nova Scotians can know just what their NDP government has gotten them into?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, my recollection of history is that the government that signed that deal on behalf of Newfoundland was, in fact, a Liberal government, Mr. Speaker. And we have seen so many fiascos entered into by former Liberal governments in this province, Mr. Speaker. We certainly don't want to emulate the work that they have done, Mr. Speaker. The simple fact of the matter is that the Decision Gate 3 numbers around the Maritime Link are being compiled. They will be part of the application that goes forward to the Utility and Review Board, and of course they will be released along with the comparisons of the other alternatives to Muskrat Falls and what the cost would be to Nova Scotians if Muskrat Falls was not proceeded with.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Mr. Speaker, this week Hydro-Québec released its 2012 report comparing our power rates to those of 13 other Canadian cities. And I will table their report because it's now official that Nova Scotians are paying the highest power rates in all of Canada. So, Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotia families today don't need a new committee to tell them what's wrong with our economy. We have the highest power rates, highest taxes, an NDP government that continues to spend and bail out all of their money. Well, Mr. Speaker, my question to the Premier, will he allow his new committee to review his expensive electricity policy and let them produce one that Nova Scotians can actually afford?
Honourable the Premier.
You know, Mr. Speaker, I wish that we hadn't been saddled with the decisions that were made by previous governments with respect to our energy portfolio, but the simple fact of the matter is that we had governments, both Liberals and Conservatives, over the years who tied us to fossil fuels. The rates that we have today reflect the cost of increases of fossil fuels. Those fuel costs get passed along directly to the families in this province. If anything, the leader of the Conservative Party, when he stands up next, should apologize to Nova Scotia families for the decisions made by past Conservative governments that have led to the position we are in today.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, power rates are just a great example of an NDP Premier who hasn't found a problem in Nova Scotia yet that he couldn't manage to make worse. And that's who should be apologizing. The Canadian Federation of Independent Business, Mr. Speaker, in their recent Business Barometer report, show that small and medium-sized companies in our province are paying the second highest power rates in all of Canada, and I will table that for the benefit of the Premier. Our small and medium-sized businesses, Mr. Speaker, do not need another committee to tell them what's wrong with our economy. Now Nova Scotia faces a 50-year, $7.4 billion decision about Muskrat Falls. So my question to the Premier, will he allow his new committee to do what he and his government have failed to do, and that is review the Muskrat Falls project and share with Nova Scotians their opinion of whether that is the right way forward or not?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, the small business sector, like the rest of of Nova Scotia, is laboring under an energy regime that was put in place by the past Conservative governments. They are the ones who tied us to the fossil fuel markets. They are the ones who privatized Nova Scotia Power. These are the decisions that established the foundation that the rates of today are on. This was the decisions made by Conservative and Liberal governments, not New Democrat governments, Mr. Speaker. And in fact, the federal Conservative government requires the closure of the coal-fired generating stations in this province. And the question is, the only question that is before us now, is what does the future of energy look like in this province? And I can tell you, Mr. Speaker, we're going to see a fully hedged portfolio that is going to allow us to have stable, long-term costs. And this is what is going to be presented to the Utility and Review Board.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party On his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Statistics Canada reports show that in the last 3 years, Nova Scotia has had the highest percentage increase in the cost of energy in all of Canada, and I will table that for the benefit of the Premier. Those are the 3 years under the Premier's watch, Mr. Speaker. Again, clearly, the Premier has not found a problem in this province that he couldn't make worse, because what that report shows is that energy costs under his watch have increased by 25% in the last 3 years, Mr. Speaker. The Premier's answer to this problem and the job losses that have resulted is to appoint a committee that will report to another committee and get back to all of us by the spring of 2014. Well, Mr. Speaker, why wait until the spring of 2014? The Premier has the power to actually do something to give Nova Scotians relief now. So my final question, will he instruct the URB that he's willing to rewrite his electricity plan so that Nova Scotians have frozen rights today?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, apparently what the leader of the Conservative Party recommends is that the taxpayers of Nova Scotia underwrite the utility in order to make up for the decisions that were made by the former Conservative governments. They are the ones, the increases that we see in the last number of years are straightforward. They are a result of increasing costs in the cost of fuel from generating stations that were built by former Conservative governments, by a utility that was privatized by the former Conservative government. Mr. Speaker, it is true that these increases flow naturally from the decisions that were made by the Conservative governments. The simple fact of the matter is his complaint amounts to this. They made a mess. We haven't been able to clean it up as fast as they like, but we're getting there.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
The Premier dashed off to Ottawa on Tuesday to have a meeting with his federal Conservative counterparts, Mr. Speaker. I'm wondering, in the Premier's meetings, was he given an update on the federal loan guarantee needed for the proposed Muskrat Falls and Maritime Link deal to proceed in the first place?
Honourable the Premier.
What I can say about that, Mr. Speaker, is that the Leader of the Opposition will find out very soon.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
I guess I'll have to be like all Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker. Wait for that next day. Wait for the next election, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, a federal court proceeding, Mr. Speaker, ended yesterday, where environmental groups have charged that the environmental assessment for Muskrat Falls have not been properly conducted, Mr. Speaker. So the project can't proceed when the legality of it is in question in the first place. So my question to the Premier. The Premier has tied Nova Scotians down to the silver bullet for renewable energy. What is his backup plan if the project falls through?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I know that the Leader of the Opposition has no plan for energy, or rather he has a plan that will cause prices to go up some 30 to 50%, but that is not in our plan, Mr. Speaker. They wanted to regulate the market. They want to ensure that they pursue failed policies in New Brunswick, ones that they have canceled. This is not an answer to our system, Mr. Speaker. Muskrat Falls represents about 8 to 10% of the overall power that must be replaced from the closure of coal-fired generating stations. The electricity plan sets out a broad-based plan for ensuring that we have a fully hedged portfolio for energy in our province that will guarantee that Nova Scotia families and businesses have stable rates.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Premier's definition of stable rates is an increase of 30% since he's taken office, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this is a Premier that is attaching us to a deal with Newfoundland and Labrador that he can't even tell us the cost of, Mr. Speaker. He doesn't even know how much the project is going to cost, Mr. Speaker, but what he did confirm today is that at the end of the day,
Nova Scotians are going to cough up over $1 billion to the province of Newfoundland and Labrador and not even own the asset, Mr. Speaker. That is some plan for energy security in the province of Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, we have known all along that business leaders around the globe have seen this government as a place to come and get whatever they wanted, Mr. Speaker. But what's even more embarrassing, Mr. Speaker, is this Premier was ridiculed in the House of Assembly in Newfoundland and Labrador yesterday because they've seen him coming too, Mr. Speaker. And we're going to give Newfoundland and Labrador $1 billion for an asset that we don't own. Maybe the Premier could stand in his place when he talks about his energy plan and tell Nova Scotians exactly what it'll mean to their power bill. How much are they going up for?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, what it will mean is that they will have long-term stable rates for one block of that energy, Mr. Speaker. What it will mean is that instead of having what we have seen through the years of Liberal and Conservative governments where you see these tremendous roller coasters in rates, you will in fact have an energy portfolio that provides stability for families, for businesses. What you won't get is what you get from the Leader of the Opposition. He was in favour of taking the HST off of home electricity, then he was against it, then he was in favour of it, then he was against it. Now he says, Mr. Speaker, that he won't remove it, even though it's bad public policy, I believe is what he said. Mr. Speaker, what he will do is he will deregulate the market, causing rates to go up some 30 to 50%. Mr. Speaker, just for your information and information of the House, I would like to table a full list of the flip-flops on HST on tax of the leader of the Liberal Party.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, Mr. Speaker, the Muskrat Falls project has always had potential for Nova Scotia, but it's a shame the Premier signed a deal without knowing the cost to consumers and resulting in something which would now probably be a shackle around the necks of Nova Scotians rather than an opportunity. Unfortunately, it seems every day we learn the additional concerns about the project, which could either delay it or possibly even cancel it. Mr. Speaker, one such issue which the Premier previously assured the House was settled is not, and those are concerns that First Nations communities have. So, Mr. Speaker, does the Minister responsible for Aboriginal Affairs believe that concerns raised by First Nations communities over this project should be addressed prior to the project moving forward?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I think that the jurisdiction that has responsible for that should deal with it. It's their constituents. They're going to be dealing with them as is appropriate. What I do know, Mr. Speaker, is the opposition in Nova Scotia, like the opposition in Newfoundland, are trying to find ways to derail this project. And it is unfortunate because this is about the future, not only of Nova Scotia, but of our region. We are going to put in place energy infrastructure that is going to strengthen the entire region, Newfoundland, Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, and it's going to mean for Nova Scotians that we have access not only to the power that we arrange through the agreement, but through additional power. Power will be wheeled through Nova Scotia into the New England market. We'll be able to take more if we want. We will then have the infrastructure to be able to get power from other suppliers if we want. We will become part of a competitive market.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his first supplementary.
You know, Mr. Speaker, the Premier just a few minutes ago accused the Leader of the Opposition of being against the Liberals in Newfoundland from decades ago, and yet he just spoke against the NDP of today in Newfoundland. So, you know, Mr. Speaker, I'm sure they'll be happy to know that. Mr. Speaker, the fact is that First Nations have concerns, and the jurisdiction that is responsible for First Nations in this country is every single Canadian, not just people in Newfoundland, not just people in Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, First Nations communities in Newfoundland and Labrador have raised concerns about a deal that this Premier is a partner to. They're concerned about wildlife impacts. They're concerned about areas where their land claims are. They're concerned about the potential health effects with mercury contamination. So, Mr. Speaker, why does the Minister responsible for Aboriginal Affairs not believe the project proposal should first address this very important concern from First Nations?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, there is a minister responsible for Aboriginal Affairs in Newfoundland and Labrador. I'm sure that they're dealing with that. I know and certainly saw the agreements that were put in place already with respect to many of these concerns. My expectation is that they will continue to deal with them. The simple fact of the matter is that the Muskrat Falls project is not only good for Nova Scotia, it's good for Newfoundland and Labrador. It will be good for New Brunswick. And it will mean, for the first time in our history, we will become part of a competitive energy environment that will allow us to actually negotiate for better power rates to be able to take from more sources. Unlike the Liberal Party that would have preferred to see us isolated and alone on the East Coast.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Muskrat Falls project may have been good for a lot of those partners if it had been a good deal, but it isn't. The only organization that this project is best for is Emera, and all you have to do is listen to the analysts last week who are salivating over the profits Emera will get from this project. You know, Mr. Speaker, the Premier stood in this House last session, and I think he was saying this again, saying, well, there are agreements in place. There are agreements in place with the Innu Nation. There are not agreements in place with the Inuit Nation. There are not agreements in place with the Métis Nations, and both of those have raised concern. The Premier is the Minister responsible for Aboriginal Affairs, and it's a simple question. Does he, as Minister, believe that the rights of First Nations are less important than moving ahead on the Muskrat Falls project before he even knows the cost?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, what we know is that this project is about building a nation. It is about increasing the strength of our region. It is about allowing Newfoundland and Labradorians and Nova Scotians and New Brunswickers to have access for the first time in their history to a competitive energy market, one that's going to strengthen our business community, that's going to provide stable rates to families in this province. That is what we are for, Mr. Speaker. It is only from the opposition that we hear what they are against.
Yeah. The Honourable Member for Argyle.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister of Economic Development. RBC's Provincial Outlook Report for Nova Scotia in September of 2012 is entitled Economy in Waiting Mode. The report says job creation stalled in the spring and was accompanied by slowing retailer sales momentum. The Conference Board of Canada shows Nova Scotia's rural economy is in a recession. We now have the highest power rates, the highest taxes, and this NDP government's wasteful spending is killing jobs. Now we have a new economic committee that will be going around the province and hearing the things that they already know. A very expensive exercise to tell Nova Scotia, I'm not making it up, I'll table the document if he wants to see it. Very expensive exercise to tell Nova Scotians what they've been telling them for the last 3 years. And I know there's actually five members of the NDP that could possibly tell them what's going on in southwestern Nova Scotia. So my question to the Minister of Economic Development, will the Minister stop commissioning more reports to tell us what we already know, and will he lower taxes and stop wasteful spending to create more jobs?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, under the Jobs Here strategy, we've created some good opportunities for Nova Scotians. What we are doing now, Mr. Speaker, is we are providing the next step so that Nova Scotians can be in a better position to take full advantage of the potential that lies ahead in our future, Mr. Speaker. And that's what we're doing.
The Honourable Member for Argyle on his first supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Since Statistics Canada started reporting in 1987, the population of southern Nova Scotia is the lowest that it's ever been. Full-time employment is the lowest it's ever been. The employment rate is the highest it's ever been, and I'll table that document as well. Donald Savoie's report, The Way Ahead for Nova Scotia, released in July of 2010, says, quote, I have long believed that a competitive tax regime is a powerful economic development instrument. Nova Scotia's tax structure is not competitive, at least when compared to other provinces. And I'll table that one as well. So we have the highest power rates, the highest taxes, and this NDP's government So wasteful spending is killing jobs. Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister, will the minister stop commissioning more reports to tell us what we already know, and will he lower taxes and stop wasteful spending to create more jobs?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, since we've been in government, we lowered taxes for small business. Now, Mr. Speaker, we didn't do it once. We didn't do it twice. We did it three times, Mr. Speaker. Three times. Mr. Speaker, we also have the Small Business Credit Union Loan Program, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we introduced the PIP initiative, Mr. Speaker, to help small and medium-sized business to be innovative, to purchase new equipment so that they could be more competitively in a global market, Mr. Speaker, and also the investment that we've made, this government has made in human resources, Mr. Speaker, so Nova Scotians can be trained for the right skills, for the good jobs, not only now, Mr. Speaker, but well into the future. We are doing things. We will continue to do things. We are on the right path.
The Honourable Member for Argyle in his final supplementary.
Well, maybe he's not hearing from the five MLAs in southwestern Nova Scotia or South Shore. According to Stats Canada report, southern Nova Scotia's labour force and unemployment rate is the smallest it's been since 1996. The total number of people employed is the lowest it's been in 24 years. I already tabled that. Donald Savoie's report, which was vaulted by this government when it was first brought out, says, quote, private sector suggests that one should look to provinces' tax structure to encourage more private sector investments from local businesses and to attract out of provinces' investments. Mr. Speaker, will the minister stop commissioning more reports to tell us what we already know, and will he lower taxes and stop wasteful spending to finally create more jobs for Southwestern's Corn?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this government has invested in Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker. I could stand here at great lengths, and I could talk about the new graduate program, Mr. Speaker, so that new graduates coming out of our universities can stay here and raise their families, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, maybe what the member opposite should be doing is writing Ottawa, Mr. Speaker, and questioning his cousins in Ottawa why all the reductions in job losses in the province of Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. That would be a good strategy.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Speaker, nearly 1,000 people have signed a petition calling on this government to call for a public inquiry into the allegations of abuse at the Nova Scotia Home for Colored Children. Organizations including the board of the Nova Scotia Home for Colored Children, Avalon Sexual Assault Centre, the African United Baptist Women's Institute Association, the Women's Centres Connect are all calling for government to initiate a public inquiry. The residents and their supporters who came to this House on Tuesday are looking for this government to call a public inquiry, Mr. Speaker. And the only person that can make this a reality is the Premier. So my question is, will the Premier commit today to calling a full public inquiry into the allegations of abuse at the Nova Scotia Home for Colored Children?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I've said before that as much as we are aware of much of the angst that is felt by people who have been associated with the allegations that have been made about the Nova Scotia Home for Colored Children, the simple fact of the matter is that the response has to be an appropriate one. And as, in fact, the board and many others have pointed out, that the things that cannot be affected by this are things like the criminal investigation, the disposition of the civil cases that are being certified and that are underway. Mr. Speaker, we are looking for what we consider to be the most appropriate response.
Mr. Speaker, in answer to the question, as I said, this has been said over and over again by many of the groups as they have come forward. In fact, it's contained in the press releases that come forward from, for example, the home themselves. So we're very respectful of all that. We do want to ensure that the response is appropriate. We know the position of the home for colored children in the broader black community in Nova Scotia, and it's important. The people from that community who have been associated with it over the years.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Speaker, the Premier knows full well that a public inquiry can happen at the same time that the criminal investigation is going on and that civil suits are before the courts, Mr. Speaker. Every lawyer that he's speaking to would tell him that. As a matter of fact, Mr. Speaker, it has happened in this province before. Mr. Speaker, an online petition calling for a public inquiry into the abuse at the Nova Scotia Home for Colored Children has already gathered nearly 650 signatures, Mr. Speaker, on top of the over 1,000 that were presented into this House, Mr. Speaker. People are signing this petition for many reasons, and I'll quote, to ensure justice for the disadvantaged and to make certain this is not repeated, end of quote. Mr. Speaker, another quote is, to show these people that someone cares. Another quote is, the truth needs to be told. That is the only way healing from this abuse can begin, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this is about an opportunity to learn truth, seek justice, and to begin the healing. So my question to the Premier, why is the government refusing to call a full public inquiry into the allegations of the Nova Scotia Home for Colored Children and allow the healing to begin?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I agree with the concept of being able to heal a community and to be able to heal a group of people. Unfortunately, the record of public inquiries is that they don't do that. In fact, what they do is they drive wedges through communities. They create even deeper divisions. They are not mechanisms that seek justice. They don't make findings of guilt or for that matter, do they in any way establish a framework for reaching what people really want, which is some way to heal the hurt that they feel. So in that regard, Mr. Speaker, what we need is an appropriate response. We are looking at what that is. We are very cognizant, and the Leader of the Opposition is wrong when he says that this is simply a matter that can go on during criminal proceedings, and that is a wrong analysis. And it is there are real impacts that take place as a result of these inquiries. They're not to be dismissed or diminished. They are not to be ignored. In fact, that is the job of government, to ensure that we protect the actual functioning of justice in the province. It takes place in the criminal courts, it takes place in our civil courts, and to balance the needs of society. That's what we are doing.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, on Tuesday, Mr. Speaker, these galleries and, Mr. Speaker, this House was filled with victims, Mr. Speaker, of the home, Nova Scotia Home for Colored Children, Mr. Speaker. They know full well. They have legal representation, Mr. Speaker. The Premier knows full well. And the legal profession in this province is telling him, Mr. Speaker, that this inquiry can happen at the same time the criminal investigation is going on, Mr. Speaker, and the civil suit's going on. It's not me, Mr. Speaker. It's not me, Mr. Speaker. It's the justice system, Mr. Speaker. There are lawyers across this city that are telling me. And, Mr. Speaker, in fact, it has already happened in this province, Mr. Speaker, at other times in our history, Mr. Speaker, where we've had criminal and civil cases before the courts when there's been a public inquiry taking place, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, and I agree with the Premier. It is not, we should not be dismissed, Mr. Speaker. But, Mr. Speaker, we should not also dismiss what has happened in this House this week. Many of these victims, as children, were looking for somebody to listen to, Mr. Speaker. And now, as adults, still, nobody is listening to them, Mr. Speaker. In a letter sent to the Premier on November 28th by the Women's Centre Connect Coordinator, Jean Fay, she writes, and I quote, an inquiry may be the only form of justice any of the former residents get to begin the healing process. An inquiry will honour their resilience and bravery in speaking publicly, end of quote. Mr. Speaker, the victims of abuse at the Nova Scotia Home for Colored Children did not have a voice as children. But this government can give them a voice now by calling a public inquiry. So my question to the Premier, will the Premier commit today to calling a full inquiry into the allegations of institutional abuse at the Nova Scotia Home for Colored Children?
Honourable the Premier.
Once again, Mr. Speaker, the Leader of the Opposition is simply wrong about public inquiries, their impacts on criminal proceedings and on civil proceedings. And yes, people say they can. They don't address the question of whether or not they should, which of course is a different question altogether. Mr. Speaker, the members on this side know well the position that the Nova Scotia Home for Colored Children has had in that community over decades. They know the work of the people who have been associated with it, its importance, in fact, as an institutional symbol. We have great compassion with those people who are making the allegations that they have made. The question that is before us is what is the most appropriate response, not only the response that should be made, but when it should be made. And those are the things that are under active consideration.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Last week, the Premier ruled out a public inquiry into the events at the Nova Scotia Home for Colored Children. This week, the Deputy Premier said, and I quote from Hansard, that the government is weighing whether or not to have a public inquiry. Mm. Well, Mr. Speaker, the Premier needs to hear directly from the former residents of the Nova Scotia Home for Colored Children about their experience, and in fact, so too do all Nova Scotians need to hear their stories. Well, I will ask the Premier, will he settle this debate now and do the right thing and call a public inquiry into the events at the Nova Scotia Home for Colored Children?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I beg to differ with the Leader of the Conservative Party. I've never ruled out the question of inquiry. What I have said is, in fact, the opposite to that. I have said that we must consider all of the circumstances that are here, including the fact that there are criminal investigations underway, including the fact that there is civil litigation that has been proposed, that the response to this should be the appropriate response. And that means that we have to be cognizant not only of the idea of a public inquiry means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. The structures of these things are as varied as there is an imagination for the bureaucracy or the lawyers who set them up. They should not be undertaken lightly, and they should not be taken believing that somehow they are going to resolve a problem. They will not. And in fact, what has happened in the past experience in this province, in other provinces, is in fact that they divide communities. They set people within those communities against each other. So, Mr. Speaker, what you want to be able to do is to ensure that you have the right response that is respectful of all of the interests that are outstanding in these circumstances.
Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Premier says he hasn't ruled out a public inquiry and then proceeds to argue against having a public inquiry. Mr. Speaker, respected law professor Dr. Wayne McKay, Dalhousie Law School, has said quite clearly and publicly and repeatedly that a public inquiry can proceed at the same time as any other legal proceeding.
That's right.
While the government claims to be weighing their decision on this, legal experts like Dr. McKay have provided real solutions about how we can proceed right now. The fact of the matter is, Mr. Speaker, nothing stands in the way of doing the right thing now and calling a public inquiry. So in light of the expert opinion of legal experts like Dr. McKay, will the Premier reconsider his position and immediately call for a public inquiry into the events at the Nova Scotia Home for Colored Children.
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, Dr. McKay, who I know well, and indeed I know many of the experts who have weighed in on this already. They say can, they don't say should. In fact, what they say is that there are real ramifications that result from making that kind of a decision. So, Mr. Speaker, I reiterate, we are not going to make decisions that we do not think are in the best interest of the community of a whole, as a whole. We are very cognizant of the dynamics of this situation and what it means not just for the individuals but for others throughout the communities. We are very cognizant of the history of the Nova Scotia Home for Colored Children as an institution and as a symbol for a community that found itself the victim of oppression, the victim of racism for many, many years, and we are not going to act in a way that is not going to respond appropriately to the circumstances.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I'm glad that the Premier knows Professor Wayne McKay, because I also have spoken to Professor McKay, and I can assure the Premier and all members of this House that he believes the government can and should call for a public inquiry into what happened at the Nova Scotia Home for Colored Children. Mr. Speaker, a few days ago in this House, the Deputy Premier told all members here and the former residents that were in the gallery that day that the government would come to the right decision sooner or later. Well, Mr. Speaker, if the government truly is weighing whether to call a public inquiry sooner or later, and they agree that it is the right thing to do, why not right now appoint an independent person to set the terms of reference to get the public inquiry underway?
Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. What we are doing is we are, as I've said before, we are considering all of the circumstances. I have, of course, been taking the advice of many interested parties in this. I am listening to what it is they have to say, whether it's the Earls who are here, as I understand, with the folks on Tuesday, whether it is senior members of the African Nova Scotian community, whether it is party members who are very interested in what the ultimate disposition of this will be. We will act in an appropriate manner in all the circumstances, including understanding that there are outstanding legal mechanisms currently underway.
The Honourable Member for Richmond.
Mr. Speaker, in the Premier's attempts to justify why his government is refusing to call a public inquiry into events at the Nova Scotia Home for Colored Children, the Premier has expressed concern over taking any actions which might impede criminal cases or civil cases. Ironically, this whole scenario has taught us that this government is in fact impeding civil cases from moving forward. The reason for that is that Nova Scotia is one of the few provinces in Canada which have yet to exempt child sexual abuse cases from the statute of limitations. So my question to the Premier is, why does Nova Scotia continue to place limits on when child sexual abuse victims can bring their civil cases to court?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I'm going to table for the honourable member the answer from the last Liberal government that was here when they set the Limitations of Actions Act that is the exact provisions that he is complaining about.
The honourable member for Richmond on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, to suggest that 20 years ago from today, that Nova Scotians have not advanced in their appreciation and their knowledge of what a child sexual abuse victim goes through is absolutely shameful for the Premier to suggest that. Mr. Speaker, every day we hear horrific stories of what it must have been like for children who have suffered from sexual abuse. And almost every other Canadian jurisdiction has acknowledged that the memories of such abuse should never be placed under any sort of time restriction. Yet for some reason, this government, in a discussion paper, has not even opened the opportunity to removing those restrictions for child sexual abuse claims. So 20 years later, now that we have an NDP government, now that we have the knowledge of exactly what it is for victims of child sexual abuse, will the Premier answer as to why Nova Scotia refuses to follow other Canadian jurisdictions and remove the limits of statute of limitations for child sexual abuse cases?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, it is true that we also have to clean up messes that were made by the former Liberal governments as well. But the fact of the matter is, Mr. Speaker, the fact of the matter is that this was part of the discussion that was taking place by the Bar Society and by the interested and as a result of that discussion paper, that discussion was actually taking place. They have not come back. They've shaken their head. But it's true, it was taking place. They have not come back for this session of the House with recommendations.
The Honourable Member for Richmond on his final supplementary.
Let me help the Premier. On July 22, 2011, well-respected Nova Scotia lawyer Ray Wagner wrote on the reforms that were being proposed in Nova Scotia. He says, quote, Nova Scotia's proposed amendments largely mirrors Ontario's Limitations Act and follow the recommendations contained in the Uniform Limitations Act. There is one especially unfortunate exception. Nova Scotia's proposed legislation protects pedophiles. Now, Mr. Speaker, a stronger statement I cannot imagine. For the Premier to suggest that this is on the table when it clearly is not begs the question of why is it that Nova Scotia continues to drag its feet. So, Mr. Speaker, almost every day in the last 2 weeks, the House has not even sat for the allotted time that the government has called. So to help the government to fill up its time, will the Premier commit today to introducing legislation to remove the limits for child sexual abuse cases in Nova Scotia?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I haven't seen what it is that the member has. He's simply wrong. In fact, the reason why they couldn't come to an agreement was around many issues that were on the table, which is why they didn't report, Mr. Speaker. So it's why we don't have legislation before the House today.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, in August 2012, in September 2012, and again in October 2012. CFIB's business barometer for Nova Scotia shows its manufacturing sector, its retail sector, and its construction sector all identify fuel and energy and taxes and regulation are the main cost pressures for their businesses. And I'll table those reports, Mr. Speaker. We don't need to commission another expensive study to tell us what job creators have been telling the NDP for years. So my question to the Minister of Economic Development and Tourism: will the minister stop commissioning more expensive reports to tell us what we already know? And will he lower taxes, stop wasteful spending to create more jobs?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I've already responded once today, but I don't mind boasting again, is that we lowered taxes three successive years, Mr. Speaker, for businesses in Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we put many places, many things in place to assist the entrepreneur in the problems of Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we've invested in people, Mr. Speaker. We've invested in businesses. We are building for the future, Mr. Speaker. We are on the right path. We are doing the right things, and we will will continue to do those things in the benefit of all Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, we have 1,400 user fees new to this since this government. 2% increase in HST, and they're talking about lower taxes. Mr. Speaker, Cape Bretons have the lowest population statistics in Canada since Statistics Canada started reporting. Cape Breton has the lowest number of people employed since 2000, the lowest number of full-time jobs since 2004, and the number of people unemployed is the highest it's been since 1998. The unemployment rate is the highest it's been since 2000. We now have the highest power rates, the highest taxes, and the NDP government's wasteful spending is killing our jobs. So, Mr. Speaker, I'll ask again, will the minister stop commissioning more reports to tell us what we already know, and will he lower taxes, stop wasteful spending, to create more jobs?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, while we are creating jobs in the province of Nova Scotia, we got a federal government, their cousins in Ottawa, that are taking jobs away, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, what about... What's going on with Revenue Canada, Mr. Speaker, when they remove jobs out of the Cape Breton area, Mr. Speaker? What about what's going on with Parks Canada, Mr. Speaker, when they do things that are reducing the employment rates right across this entire province, especially at Fortress Louisbourg in Cape Breton, Mr. Speaker? Mr. Speaker, that member over there should be on the telephone and phone his allies in Ottawa and say, stop, stop, stop.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Vice President of Human Resources for Nova Scotia's largest private sector employer, Sobeys, came before Law Amendments Committee last year to oppose the NDP's first contract legislation. He said the legislation amended is totally unnecessary and will do serious damage to Nova Scotia's reputation as an excellent place to work and indeed carry on business. And, Mr. Speaker, I'll table that report. We don't need another expensive study to tell us what job creators have been telling the NDP is wrong with our economy. Mr. Speaker, there might be 30 cranes in Halifax. There's not one in Cape Breton. Not one. Will the minister stop commissioning more expensive reports, and will he rip up his first contract arbitration bill that put a chill through our business communities?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I want to give you a fact, Mr. Speaker, through you to the member opposite, Mr. Speaker. Let's talk about the CFIB, and let's talk about the budget of this government in 2012, the A rating when it came to tax competitiveness that we received from CFIB.
That's the fact.
From CFIB, Mr. Speaker. Those are the facts, Mr. Speaker. Look, this is, do you know what? And Mr. Speaker, allnovascotia.com, Mr. Speaker. Valerie Payne, Mr. Speaker. I tabled this once, but by golly, I'm going to table it again.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay.
Mr. Speaker. On Tuesday, the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives recently released a report detailing the damage Harper's austerity measures will have on Nova Scotia. And I was there for that launch, Mr. Speaker, and I can tell you that the numbers truly are very alarming. The Harper Conservatives will cut 2,072 jobs in Nova Scotia. These are on top of the full-time job losses caused by 3.5 years of this government's economic mismanagement. After the Prime Minister's refusal to come to Halifax, the Premier took to Ottawa to meet with the Harper Conservatives. So my question to the Premier, will the Premier outline who he met with and what he discussed with those officials while in Ottawa?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I'm happy to tell the member for Glace Bay that I met with the Prime Minister. I met with Minister Labelle, who he would know is with Transport Canada. I met with Minister McKay. I met with Minister Kenny. With all of them, I discussed matters within their various portfolios, all of which touch on the economic growth and health of Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotians are concerned by this Premier's relative silence on the damage the Harper's Conservatives' austerity measures will wreak on our province. We know the Conservatives are going to cut $2.5 billion from the defence budget. Nova Scotians are worried that the already delayed shipyard project may suffer because of these cuts. In addition to the Conservative cuts, we know a recent managerial shift at Irving has happened, and Nova Scotians are also concerned about the impact this will have on our ability to stick to an already revised shipyard schedule. My question to the Premier, can the Premier guarantee today that there will be no further delays with the shipbuilding contract?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, no, I can't guarantee that. I certainly can't guarantee what the weather will be next week either. There are lots of other things I can't guarantee. What I can say is that we prepare to make sure that we take maximum advantage of the contracts that we have before us, the industrial contracts. That is why we are ensuring that Nova Scotia community colleges are able to train young men and women so that they'll be able to get jobs in the largest industrial contract in our history. It's why we're working with the universities to make sure that we have appropriate numbers of engineers to be able to fill the job requirements, people in IT, people throughout the supply chain that will be able to fit in and make their lives working on those contracts. It is, in fact, Mr. Speaker, why we invested in that contract, one that if the member for Glace Bay had his way, we wouldn't have, and those ships would be built in Quebec or British Columbia or somewhere else, but not in Halifax.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, we have a federal Conservative government implementing severe austerity measures that will cause the loss of over 2,000 jobs. We have a provincial government whose mismanagement of the economy has cost us more than 3,000 collective jobs. There are more Nova Scotians unemployed now than during the recession, and this government's inability to grow the economy, this government's austerity measures, and this government's silence on Harper's cuts will mean things will get worse if this government doesn't change the provincial direction. The launch of this government's Rural Economic Development Task Force is certainly a sign of hope. Though this task force is 3.5 years late, Mr. Speaker, at least the government's finally admitting that its strategies so far have failed rural Nova Scotia. My question for the Premier. Rural Nova Scotia has lost 8,200 people and 4,400 full-time jobs in the last 3 years. Why has he waited so long to act?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, there are 7,600 more Nova Scotians working today than before we came to power, Mr. Speaker. Just recently, in fact, within the last hour, the member for Argyle actually tabled the outlook from RBC. It's already been tabled, so I don't need to table again, but I would like to point out that what it actually says is that the real GDP of the province next year will double, the employment will increase by 1.2%, that unemployment will go down, that retail sales will increase, that housing starts will increase, and the consumer price index will go down, Mr. Speaker. If you're going to table something and say that it says one thing and it actually says the other, Mr. Speaker, that is no way to instill confidence. In fact, it says the domestic economy in Nova Scotia is doing very well.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove.
Mr. Speaker, in a letter sent to the Minister of Community Services on October 18th of this year, the Canadian Federation of Independent Business asked for clarity on the process for repayment to businesses owed money for work completed on behalf of the North End United Community Housing Co-op. In particular, Nova's Doors and Windows is owed over $77,000 and has heard nothing about this outstanding bill. In fact, the total amount owed to the 11 creditors is over $1.1 million. Mr. Speaker, this project ran over budget by millions of dollars. Nova Doors completed the work 2 years ago, and yet they still haven't been paid. My question to the Minister of Community Services, when is her department going to give Nova Doors and Windows and all the other companies awaiting payment some answers?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, first let me explain to the member opposite how it works, because she doesn't understand that. And how it works is the fact that the Department of Community Services and the government provides the funding to North End. United. They are a nonprofit co-op who had a board of directors that worked as a board of directors, and they were the ones who made the decisions with respect to the development there, the renovations, and so forth. We are the funders. They are the ones who have the legal rights to make the decision, which means that they're the ones who are responsible for the decisions that were made there and what's taking place right now with respect to their issues of finances. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Bedford-Birch Cove on her first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, while the government comes quickly to the aid of big companies and big banks in the province, they're content to let small businesses twist in the wind. Will the minister commit today to ensuring these small businesses owed money by her department get fair treatment?
Honourable the Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The fair treatment comes through the legal system, and that's exactly what has been taking place, is that this is a bankruptcy legal issue. It is not an issue of community services or the taxpayers of Nova Scotia. We funded the project. There was issues that took place within those who had the legal right to make those decisions.
The Honourable Member for Bedford-Birch Cove on her final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, this government likes to pay all kinds of lip service about small business being the backbone of our economy, but when push comes to shove, they like to shove and push small businesses. They keep leaving them twisting and hanging. They did it in the Southwest, and they're doing it here again. It is unconscionable that these businesses are still owed over $1.1 million for work that was done for a project funded by community services. There is no oversight ensuring this payment. This government makes income assistance recipients account for every bus token they use, but there's no accountability on their own projects. Mr. Speaker, why does this government have a double standard when it comes to accountability?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, that absolutely shows you why, when that party was in, that they had a blank check writing to any business, because obviously they don't understand the fact is that are we supposed to write a check to every business in Nova Scotia that goes under, that the government has nothing to do with? See, that gets them upset because they know it's the truth. That's who they are. They're the ones who would just say,
order,
oh, how much?
Order, order. The time allotted for oral questions put by members has expired. I will now recognize the Honourable Member for Halifax-Chibucto on an introduction.
Mr. Speaker, members will have noticed that we have been joined in the East Gallery by a school group today. I am happy to draw the attention of the House to the presence in that gallery of 22 grade 3 students who come to us from Oxford School, one of the many fine schools located in my constituency. They are accompanied today by four adults: Carolyn Van Gerp, Shahara Mboldenya, Amy Holland, and Ian Palmer. I would ask if all of our guests would rise and if the members of the House would give them a warm welcome.